I think we're going to go ahead and get started, even though we a few minutes before 2:15. How many of you teachers like teaching science? Okay, that's not everybody. So how many of you don't? That's still not everyone yet. I'm trying to get a sense of how hard I have to work here to convince you that this really can be. You know, I think that teaching math and science are, I've taught a lot of different courses. Well, hi. Good to see you. I've taught a lot of different kinds of classes over the last number of years, and it's science classes, math classes that I probably enjoy the most. So we're going to spend some time thinking together about what goes into a worthwhile science class. And I think it's really it's in the reach of all of us as teachers. Who needs a handout yet? We have a few extras up here in front. John, we need some.
Raise your hand if you need one.
Thank you, John. Now, I would ask you, I know some of you have already memorized the back side of this paper. Just ignore that. Okay, if you haven't looked at it, don't. If you already have, forget everything that you see there. I want to begin by just thinking with you what we mean by science. And so I have two definitions here for us to consider. The first one is saying that science is about the world. Any ideas what would go into that first blank? Okay, I'm going to fill in this one, and then you tell me what this one is. So it's about the physical world. Can y'all see that green back there? Okay. So it's what about the physical world?
Facts.
What?
Facts.
Facts, that would be a good word. I'm going to make it just a little broader than that.
Knowledge
is going to be the word we're going to use. So, it is knowledge about the physical world gained through what?
Observation.
Ah. Yes. Observation. Is that the only way to gain knowledge? Can we get knowledge otherwise?
Yes.
Some examples?
Going to school?
And when you go to school, how do you gain knowledge?
Learning.
What?
Learning.
Yeah, but what's the means by which you learn?
Study.
You're studying, which is that a form of observation?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're not here to work on a philosophy of learning, but this is not the only way we learn. I would suggest a couple others for us. One is through being told, and maybe that's what you have in mind about school. But we can learn, not necessarily seeing something. Have any of you seen George Washington, the first president? And yet you know about him. How? Through revelation. Now, it's a small R revelation. Don't confuse it with capital R. It's a small R, but someone told you that. So revelation's a way we can learn things through thinking about them. Did any of you know what 385 times 7,241 is? I doubt any of you know the answer to that. But it wouldn't take you long to reason your way to an answer, right? So that's another way to learn. But science uses observation. Now here's another definition. It's the systematic of gaining about the world. Now at this point, you can probably fill in these. gaining what? If this is physical, gaining
knowledge.
So what is this?
Study.
The systematic study of gaining knowledge. That would be good. But there's a better word here, maybe.
Method?
The systematic method. That can work, too.
Process.
Did I hear it?
Process.
The systematic process of gaining knowledge about the physical world. Are these two definitions the same? I gave you two definitions for science. Are they saying the same thing? What's different about them?
In the first one, you can just walk out in the woods and just look around, or you can randomly pick up a this or that, or get up close to something. In the second one, there's a little more purpose and you're intentional a little more.
Okay, so this one feels a little more kind of whatever happens to you. This one, okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that distinction between the two, but thank you. How are the two different?
Second one requires you getting out there and showing some action to get into it, and the other one is just knowledge, just studying.
Okay, this one maybe is just reading about a tree. This one is going out there and hugging the tree.
The first one is like information or knowledge. The second one is a method of learning.
Yeah.
Method of gaining knowledge.
Okay, so which is it? Science is what? Is it a set of knowledge, or is it a process for getting knowledge?
Both, right?
Now, when you teach science, do you teach it as a body of information to move from your head to their head, or from the textbook to their head? Or is it that you're teaching a process? Now, both are significant. And what I want to do here is to just teach a little science class together. Okay? And then we'll use that to reflect on how do you teach science. So, but before I launch into the class, we gave two definitions for science. How is science limited? There's two ways that our definitions show that science is actually limited into what it can... Well, it's limited. Let's stop there. In what two ways is science limited?
We can't observe everything.
What's that?
There are things we can't observe.
So there are things that are real that you can't access through observation. Okay? So therefore, it's limited in the scope of what it can study or what it can reveal, right? Good. That's one way it's limited. How else is it limited?
Maybe this is the same thing, but that's just the physical world, not other realities.
Yeah, good. That's giving some content to what was said there. Basically, science is limited to what can be seen, smelled, tasted, touched. Yeah, what did I miss there? Heard. How else is it limited?
Our understanding isn't perfect. So you might draw the wrong conclusion from what you're observing.
Okay, but that's a limitation in you and me to make it. But is that a limitation of science? How is science limited? We said it's limited in that it only works for what can be observed, what can be seen, what we can access with our senses. Anything real outside of that, it can't help us with. There's another way in which science is limited. It's connected to that one.
Well, can we test it or experiment it on?
Say more. What are you thinking there?
I get this one about it has to be something that's testable or can we experiment it on?
Oh, okay. Let's just say it this way. It only uses observation, which I think is what you were getting at with being tested. That's the only way it can access the physical world. It may be... So first of all, we say it's limited to the physical world, and it's only limited to accessing the physical world through observing it. What may be that there's other ways of finding out things about the physical world other than observation. So it's limited both in its method, that is observation, and the scope, the physical world. Okay? So now with that, let's just let that aside, and let's do something together here. And this is probably something you have seen multiple times, but maybe you haven't just explored it to some of its depths like we'll try to do here. So what we're going to do is take this bottle, you take a piece of tissue paper, light it on fire, drop it into the bottle. And then we're going to place one of our eggs right there in the mouth of the bottle. Okay? That's what we're going to do. What I want you to do is to observe. Use all of your senses. Smell. Taste. That one you may need to leave out from it. But listen. Watch. Be sure you're someplace where you can see. See if... Just observe. There is no observation too small or insignificant here. Okay? So we're going to observe what happens when I light the tissue paper, drop it in, and place the egg on the bottle. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. You said you wanted, if I needed a volunteer, you would help. You want to help? And can I trust you with fire? With the edge. Okay. What I'm going to have you do is... light that on fire and drop it in there. Okay? And I will place the egg on. There we go. Now, what did you observe? That happened really fast, so... Did anybody smell anything? What did you smell? We'll start there. You saw the egg. Yeah. And you wondered, how old is that egg? Yeah. I'm from Pennsylvania, so it could be. No, it actually, I didn't bring it with me. Okay, you smelled an egg. Any other smells? Yes. And you smelled some smoke? You smelled any smoke?
No, I did, but I didn't.
You didn't? Okay. Okay, what did you see? What did you observe? Again, anything you want to say is fine.
I thought I saw when you set the egg on top, it did a slight jiggle. I couldn't tell what that was from, but I thought it was...
You saw a jiggle. Did any of the rest of you see a jiggle? I'm glad you saw that jiggle. That's something a lot of people never see. It doesn't always happen because... I'm not going to answer because yet. I almost didn't commit an indiscretion there. Okay, so it jiggled. What else did you see?
It was pulled to the bottom, pulled to the neck.
Okay, it pulled. Is that what you said?
It was
pulled. It was pulled. It was pulled into the bottle. Who did the pulling? Oh, a push. It was pushed. Okay, so pull, push. Did you see a pull or a push? Yes.
It was pushed out and then it was pulled in. Like there was air pushed out.
Oh, there was air. Did you see the air?
Well, I've seen the result of it going out because of the egg vibrating.
Okay, what you saw though was the jiggling. The air is you trying to understand why it jiggled. Right?
Well,
And so what I'm looking for here is just observation. I'm not looking for interpretations. I don't want to know why. I want to know what.
You can tell at the top that the egg squished out at the top.
Oh, the egg was squishing out at the top. Good, that's an observation. What else did you observe?
The fire started going out and put the egg on top.
Oh, thank you. So, the timing, you said, when we put the egg on the top, the fire started going out. Do you agree with that? Is that the right timing?
Shortly after.
Shortly after. But he said started going out. So maybe it started declining. But you're saying you think it started declining a little bit later. I'm wondering if... Do y'all remember that well? As to when these things actually happen. We maybe should do this time-lapse photography and so we could actually check and see when things started happening. But anyway, what else did you observe?
The egg fell to the bottom of the jar.
The egg fell to the bottom of the jar.
Or it moved from the neck of the jar.
Good, good. So it moved. It moved from here down to here. What else did you observe? Anything else?
The fire went out.
It also rolled once it relocated to the bottom of the jar. It rolled to the edge of the jar.
Ah,
the
okay.
Inside edge.
Good, good.
And it made a very nice sucking noise.
Oh, we have some sounds now. It made a nice sucking noise. Does that mean it was being sucked in? That might be interpretation, Libby. I'm not sure. But it made a noise that sounded like sucking. okay. Good. Are we done? Other observations?
Well, it kind of, it bounced.
It hit the bottom and bounced. Good.
The egg was elongated and scrambled to the neck of the bottom.
So it got a little longer, yeah. Y'all getting good at this. By the way, if we repeated this, do you think you would have ways to look with new eyes? Maybe to see some things that you hadn't seen before. And if we had more than 45 minutes, that we would repeat and repeat and repeat. But I don't think we'll do that. Let's just move on and move to interpretation. So observation, what we do there, we just look and try to keep explanations out of what we're seeing. Now let's move to interpretation. Why did the egg go into the bottle? We agree that that's what happened, right? It went into the bottle. Why? And feel free here, folks, to simulate a junior high classroom. What explanations might you hear? Although I'm just going to ask you to be a bit serious about it. Tie your observations, although they can be wild. Your interpretations can be wild, but tie them to an observation. So, why did the egg go into the bottle? Any explanations? Many of you probably know why it went in, and that's fine to even talk about that. But yes, Jason, thank you.
It wanted to get warm.
Okay. That's probably about seventh grade. It wanted to get warm, is that what you said? Okay. So the egg has taken on a personality and wants to get warm, okay? Other explanation. And tie that to the evidence, Jason.
Well, it went down and got... It actually rolled over basically onto the burning, or used to be burning, heat.
It went to where the heat was.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thank you. There's tying an explanation with observation. What else? Why did the egg go into the bottle? What's that?
Did it get smaller?
Did the what get smaller? The bottle?
The egg.
So, we're saying we had some heat in there that caused the egg to get smaller. Then, therefore, the egg could go into the bottle. That's the possible explanation. Good. Thank you. Who else?
One problem with that, though, it expands. You make things expand.
Oh. But not everything does it.
That's why, too.
What?
That's why the egg jiggled, because the air was expanding.
The egg jiggled, you're saying, because the air was expanded. Okay, and so there you're tying the observation of the jiggling egg with saying that air was trying to get out of the bottle. And the reason it was trying to get out because it was expanding. And the reason it was expanding is because it was being heated. Okay, so there's an explanation. Not a very interesting one, but an explanation. Actually, it's the right one, so. What other explanations? Which, by the way, he did not answer the question, did he? He only talked about an explanation for why the egg jiggled, not for why it went in the bottle. Yes?
Maybe the gravity increased inside the bottle.
Oh, now that's interesting. What would have caused the gravity to increase? We've got a lot of work to do in this class. By the way, part of what I want you to see here is that it really is okay to wind up with a number of different hypotheses. You don't have to control. I had no idea the kinds of craziness that y'all would come up with. But that's okay. Okay, so let's keep going, though. So we have a couple different ideas as to why the egg went in the bottle. Are there others? Yes.
Did the oxygen get burned up inside and create a suction effect?
What's oxygen?
One of the elements in the air we're breathing.
Okay, so you're saying that in this jar is air, and one of the components of the air is oxygen.
Right.
Do y'all agree with that? Is that a fact that we can agree on? Okay. And you're suggesting that the fire maybe ate up the oxygen. Is that what you're...
The fire needs oxygen, and if you deprive it of oxygen, it will go out. And
okay.
Our observation was the fire did go out.
Ah, okay. So maybe it ran out of oxygen. Keep going.
So what I'm saying is, when it ran out of oxygen, did that create a suction effect, which made the egg elongate and fall in?
Okay, let me try to understand. You're saying since there's the oxygen is not in here anymore, there's less air overall, and the egg is pulled in to fill that space.
Why does it have something to do with the air pressure on the top?
Pushing it in? Okay, but you're saying, again, since there's less oxygen in here, the air pushes in. Is that?
There's less air pressure on the top.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how could we test that? I mean, you're saying it needs oxygen to burn, and it ran out of oxygen, and therefore, possibly, that's what created a lower pressure in here, using your language, and the higher pressure out here pushes in.
My thought was that it, being the oxygen was not all gone, it created suction and sucked it in.
Ah, okay. So again, what's the suction coming from? Because there's less air in there. Is that what you're...
Right.
And that's creating the suction. Okay, that's a valid explanation. By the way, it's the explanation that most people tend to have for this. It's not really the right one, but it's one that most of us have heard somewhere along the line. Now, I'm going to cut to the chase at the moment, and we're going to describe our best understanding as to why the egg went in the bottle. And it's along the lines of some of your explanations. We can give a two-word explanation of why it went in the bottle, and it has to do with kinetic theory. That's our two words. The kinetic theory says the following things about the physical world. It says that all matter is composed of particles, and it's a particular kind of particle. They are small particles. And that includes the air here in this bottle. That the air in there is made up of very, very small particles. That's the first understanding of kinetic theory. The second is that these particles are in
motion.
So they're moving. The third part of the theory is that the motion of the particles produces what we call heat. And that's when we can define another one of our terms. I think I have on your paper temperature. And we're defining that as, this is one definition. I like this one for this context. It is the average speed of the particles in a substance. So what that means is a thermometer is really a speedometer, just like you have on a car. And it's telling you the speed of the particles. And that really is the case. Now, the fourth thing is that adding heat to the particles does what? Adding heat to the particles increases their speed, or the speed. So, increases the speed of the particles. And one more component here. Faster moving particles tend to take up more space. Five major ideas in the kinetic theory that now allows us to revisit what happened here. So you have the particles in here, and when we add, they're moving around at a particular rate, taking up a particular amount of space, this amount of space. And then when we put the tissue in there, we're adding heat, which causes the particles to move faster and to take up more space. Yeah, expand. So therefore, the reason it was bobbing is because the air is coming out of there and it's making the egg, I think the scientific term I heard here was jiggle. Okay, so it was jiggling. Then, what did we say happened? The fire went out, which means what's happening to the particles in here? They're beginning to cool. When they cool, what's the opposite? Or in here, what's happening to them? They're slowing down. When they're slowed down, they... What's that?
Contract,
or they take up less space. So they're saying, hey, we have room in here for some of our buddies. Where are their buddies? Out here. And so back to your, their buddies say, hey, there's a party going on in there. Let's get in, you know. And so they're pushing to get into that space. So yes, this was not sucked in. It was pushed in. Just like when we use a straw to drink a milkshake, it's not that you suck it into your mouth. It's that the air pressure out there pushes it up the straw into your mouth. Now, I know you have to create a low-pressure area. That's what you call sucking. But you're creating a low-pressure area so the high-pressure area can push it into your mouth. Now, with that in place, let's ask another question. By the way, did we adequately describe why the egg went in? So it took up, this pushed the egg in, basically, is what we're saying. The oxygen point, we know from the law of conservation of matter that while the oxygen is necessary for the fire, it actually just recombines, or it combines with other elements in a chemical reaction, so it's still there. And so it's not so much that the oxygen has been depleted as it is the pressure that's going on here. Now, the big question, after we understand this, understand why the egg went in the bottle, the question is, how do we get the egg out of the bottle?
Reverse the process.
Reverse the process. Say more. How are we going to do that?
I don't know. I didn't think
it through. That's right. Okay, but how could we light a fire out here? How could we get a high pressure area in there? Okay. Drill a hole in, put an air nozzle in, blow it out, or
heat it. Yeah.
Okay, so if we would put the egg there like that, maybe. Oh, by the way, we didn't mention that when we had the egg in here like this, that acted as a one-way valve, so air could get out, but it wouldn't let any additional air back in. That's why this works so nicely. But if we were to take this egg, put it in there, create our one-way valve again, you're saying if we could heat the air up in here, that would create a higher pressure than out here, and then it would be forcing it out. How could we heat this up in a way that won't break my jar? If there's hot water back there at that faucet, we could actually just run hot water on it, and it would almost do it. Hot water is right on the line being enough heat to push it out. But let's keep going. Are there other ways we could get it out? Yes.
You could get somebody with a large oral cavity and create a low pressure.
Yes. Why would that work? You're saying if I blow, I mean, he's saying suck. I'm liking your idea of what we're saying. I'd rather blow on this. And you're saying if I can blow air in here, then that would force it out. But I'm in the way. Okay. So he's suggesting blowing. Are there other ways? Yes.
Keep swinging around the head.
Instead of swinging around my head, I like doing it like that. You ready for it?
Start.
I can do it a lot harder. I just don't quite want to. Anyway, is there any other way? Come on, think outside the box, folks. How can we get it out of the bottle?
Break the jar!
But of course, we don't want to do that. So, are we out of ideas?
Cut the egg up.
What? Oh, we could cut the egg up. Yeah, that would be good. But then we wouldn't have the egg to repeat, would we?
You can even put some soap on the egg.
What?
If you put some soap on the egg, it'd slide out of here. I mean,
I need to check.
Like the time. Where are we at?
We go to 3? Okay. You said something about did you say put soap on it? Try to get it to slide out a little bit easier. Yeah.
I've noticed when you, speaking of soap, if you have a sealed bottle and you put soapy water for washing it and you shake it up, when you open the lid, it goes poof. Like there's a buildup of pressure. You can maybe shake up, like put some soapy water in there. You have to figure out what your proportions are, and you can shake it up, and it might push the egg out.
Yeah. There's another idea over here.
I'm just going to say take another jar, a larger amount.
Okay.
Put fire in there, put a tight seal around it,
Tuck
it into the jar of water, and then put your egg in.
Good. Lots of possibilities. I think we'll just try the blowing into the bottle approach and trying to see if there's a trash can up here. But this is my favorite part. Again, if we had more time with this, I would have walked us through the scientific method and actually tried to test some of the hypotheses that we had developed as to why the egg went into the bottle. Now, I have on your paper scientific method, and I just use a simple five-part process for this. The first one is you start with a problem. The reason that this is so significant is that I think teaching this ascientific method is one of the most critical features of science teaching. If you've given them science content, but really haven't helped them to understand a process for learning through science, then we have failed. But you start with a problem, and this is so much fun. It's things like, how do you get the egg out of the bottle? You notice how much fun we had with that. And then you come up with, well, if this is the answer, here's the problem is how do I get it out of the bottle? And then you make these guesses about how you could get it out. And then you come up with some kind of a procedure. See, your hypothesis that a number of you said was along the lines that we have to either increase the pressure in the bottle or decrease the pressure outside the bottle. That was your hypothesis. A procedure was, in one case, blow into it. And then, of course, we did that. We received some data. The egg started coming out. And then we analyzed that data. And then from that, you draw a conclusion that, yes, our hypothesis was correct, or no, it's not. And your conclusion often leads to a new problem. So what, if somebody says, well, I think that the egg goes into the bottle because it was seeking for heat. Well, we'd say, okay, how could we test that hypothesis? What could we do in order to see if that's correct or not? And then we would implement that procedure and so on. Now, there on your paper, I say I have a place as conclusion. And what you could do there is write in a sentence or two how you would now answer the question, why did the egg go in the bottle? But we're going to move on because of time. And I wanted to ask you, so here was just a little science class that we did, half an hour science class. And you'll notice that I didn't mind wrapping the entire half hour around one demonstration. Now, okay. But my question for you is, and I don't offer this as some kind of a great model of a science class. I just offer it as this is something you could do in a science class. I want you to think, though, with me, what makes a worthwhile science experience or science class? And maybe what we did here in the last half hour has inspired some thoughts about what you should do or you shouldn't do. Feel free to, I don't mind critiques. This is not perfect by any means. So, what do you observe about how to teach science?
I think the big thing is about the interaction with students and teachers.
And can we say not just allow, but invite?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Take time for experiments. I I think I might even take it one step further and say, build your class around what I would call demonstrations. This was kind of a mixture of both a lab and a demonstration. Good. What else do you want to observe about teaching science?
It's nice when you know what you're teaching.
So that's why you need to come back tomorrow when we talk about developing as a science teacher. Because I want to talk to us. When I first started teaching science, I didn't know nearly what I know now. There is a path that science teachers can walk from where you don't know much to where you know just a little bit more. And it shouldn't, your lack of knowledge shouldn't necessarily keep you from walking the path. Who else?
You had us find the answers on our own and they just told them this.
And why is that significant?
Learn more that way. Learn how to learn, I guess.
And you said we learn more, and then you said we learn differently. We learn a different kind of thing. Yeah. Good. Other observations?
You came prepared.
What's that?
You were prepared.
And that's a good thing? And I'll admit that I probably would not have done a class like I just did here 25 years ago. I would have been scared to. I would have been scared to be this open-ended with a group like you folks. And so some of that does come with just trying and failing and realizing that that's not the... Actually, that the failing can be a very positive learning experience for us all. Others? Libby?
You did make sure we learned certain things.
Ah.
Some of the things on the board at the time, you did have things in mind that you wanted the students to get.
Yeah. Yeah, so it wasn't just process, was it? There was content.
I like how the way you wrote the terms on the board emphasized the meaning.
Mm.
Emotion and increasing that.
Well, maybe as we wrap up, I want to emphasize a couple things. Science is both process and content. Science teaching should include both. Both process. I've really focused on process, but I gave content as well. I tend to think, and I didn't start this way, I tend to think it's best to embed content in process rather than process being, if we have time for it, we'll do it. Now, that takes a lot of work, though. By the way, this particular one I use with college-level students very successfully. They have tremendous amount of fun, even though some of them have seen it, whatever, just have a lot of fun with interacting about what may be going on and so on. But it can also be used very successfully with fourth graders. So it's a nice, but it's just not every demonstration has this kind of breadth and possibility. But you find demonstrations where one demonstration can make the entire 50-minute class period. So science and process. And then the last thing I already just said, and that is that one good demonstration, or we could maybe say experiment, can anchor an entire science lesson. Look for them. Look for the one kind of thing that you can just milk it for all it's worth and then wrap all the content that you need into that one experience. Any questions that you want to ask before we dismiss here today?
What
Yes, go ahead.
What science curriculum do you teach?
What science curriculum?
And were you asked, what was the last part that I teach? Or
what does this fit like?
Oh, what does this fit?
Most curriculum has way too many questions.
Yes.
It doesn't fit a curriculum.
It does, but very few people use it. There are some curriculums like, I don't know if you ever heard of AIMS. I forget what the A and the I stand for, but math and science are the MS, where it is strictly an investigation-based approach. I think it goes too far that way. If you're going to teach the way I'm talking about, you have the textbook, but then you develop as a teacher in addition to that, and you bend the textbook to what you do in class each day. So I think any curriculum can fit this if you're willing to modify it. Back there.
You said look for the processes that are those all inclusive.
Yes.
Do you have one or two more suggestions?
Okay, that's where you may turn to the back if you'd like. You'll notice this is a page from a book by Tick Lean, Invitation to Science Inquiry. This is one of the best collections of investigations that I'm aware of. Unfortunately, it's out of print. Fortunately, it is available as a downloadable PDF from Eric, I think it's called. But you can Google Tick Lean, Invitation to Science Inquiry, and you can download this. It was a $50 book. But each page is our investigations like this, and you notice it gives you explanations and so on. I'm going to talk more about Tick Lean tomorrow, so we'll get there. Anyone else before I let you go? Okay, you're dismissed.